Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. In our last segment, we talked about the lesser-known history behind the red cap attendants at Grand Central Terminal, part concierge, part tour guide, who wound up influencing railroad culture. There's a lot more to know about the history of Grand Central Terminal, which was designated a landmark 53 years ago this week, on August 2nd, 1967, by the New York City Landmarks Preservation Commission. The announcement said, quote, "Grand Central Station, one of the great buildings of America, evokes a spirit that is unique in the city. It combines distinguished architecture with brilliant engineering solution, wedded to one of the most fabulous railroad terminals of our time. Monumental in scale, this great building functions as well today as it did when it was built." So maybe you've been through Grand Central to get where you needed to go. But you can also go to Grand Central and learn a lot about it and New York history. So today we're taking a field trip to 42nd Street with one of our guided tours that you can do safely. It's part of our series, Summer in Place.
End of the spring and here she comes.
Joining us for this edition of Summer in Place is Anthony W. Robbins. He's a tour guide and author of Grand Central, 100 Years of a New York Landmark. Anthony, thanks for being with us.
Oh, Allison, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So our field trip starts outside of the terminal at Park Avenue and 41st Streets. And you put a lot of emphasis on making sure we take in the view from those cross streets. What do you want people to consider when they see that view?
Well, a couple of things. If you're standing at the corner of 41st and Park, and if you look to your facing north and at the terminal, and you look to your left going west, you'll see the 42nd Street Library, the great big public library, 42nd and 5th. And then if you look instead to the north, straight ahead of you, there'll be Grand Central. And what you're looking at are two of the grand buildings that were once considered the major monuments of the city. You know, before the skyscrapers took over, it was buildings like this, maybe 7 or 8 stories tall, but taking up 2 square blocks. Often think of the old Custom House down at Bowling Green, think of the Metropolitan Museum or the Museum of Natural History. This is the only place in New York where you can actually see two of them from the same spot, which is why I like to start the tour there. And we try to remember that New York at the turn of the last century was not so much of a skyscraper city. It was a large monumental building. And that changed. And today, if you stand there looking at straight at the facade of Grand Central, of course, it's much shorter than any of the surrounding skyscrapers. However, at least my eye always goes straight to the facade of Grand Central. There's something about its scale and its design, also the fact that it cuts off Park Avenue. So if you're looking at Park Avenue, you know, boom, there's the vista. And it's just one of the most dramatic, because that doesn't happen often in Manhattan, it's one of the most dramatic sights in the city.
Why was it so important that it was regal, that it was made to look so grand?
Oh, you know, absolutely grand. And, you know, this is the third Grand Central on the site. It was 1913. It was preceded by Grand Central Station, which was 1898, which was preceded by Grand Central Depot, the original Grand Central, in 1869-71. And even back then, a real estate magazine, right? You know, people interested in dollars and cents more than anything else. And the real estate, that's New York's always been that way without real estate, had a little editorial. The plans for the new Grand Central had been announced. And the editor wrote, "People entering New York City should find themselves in a palace and not a shed. So we applaud Commodore Vanderbilt's plans for a new Grand Central Depot." And it's just always been that. And it got, and each subsequent version was grander than the last. And this is just one of the great monumental sites of New York City. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with French influence. There were a number of architects and engineers involved in creating it, but the designer of what we actually see, the architectural plan, Whitney Warren of the firm of Warren and Wetmore, had spent 10 years in Paris between in the late 1880s and early 1890s studying at the École des Beaux-Arts, the School of Fine Arts there. And he brought a very strong Parisian-influenced sensibility back with him to New York. Grand Central isn't modeled on any specific building in France, but parts of it are. So, for instance, the Pershing Square Viaduct, the sort of the rise in the road that takes cars up across 42nd Street and then around either side of the terminal. It's modeled on the Alexander III Bridge in Paris. I mean, it's very close. I've had a group of Parisians. We were walking down, a group of engineers, and I asked them, "What does this look like?" And they said, "Oh, it looks like every bridge in Paris." And I said, "Well, but is there any particular bridge?" "Oh, it's the Alexander III Bridge." That's how close it is. The whole facade that you see is designed on Beaux-Arts principles. It's got to be grand. It has to be a vista. If you wander around Paris today or look at pictures and books, which is all we can do right now, you will see all these little streets closed by enormous vistas of classical buildings. Now, Whitney Warren would have seen that in Paris, and he had a chance because the original Grand Central was there blocking Park Avenue. He had a chance to create this grand vista, and so he did. The triple arches that you see are modeled on the old ancient Roman triumphal arches. They're basically welcoming you to the city. Whitney Warren understood this history. He wrote about it, and that's how he saw Grand Central, as it, announcing to you, the person who's never been to New York, say, coming into the city, you aren't just any place. You are in the metropolis of the United States.
My guest is Anthony Robbins, author of Grand Central, 100 Years of a New York Landmark. We're doing a little summer in place, self-guided tour of Grand Central. Let's go inside. Let's talk about the main staircases. Have quite a bit of history to them. What's the difference between the two main staircases, first of all?
Well, the difference is very simple. One is 100 years older than the other. they were both in the original plan. But when it came time to build, the architects said, apparently, this one on the west goes up to Vanderbilt Avenue. There's some place to go when you get to the top of the steps. But the one on the east, it doesn't go anywhere. And we're not going to build a staircase to nowhere. So they didn't build it. When the restoration was going on 100 years later, the firm of Beyer, Blinder, and Bell, they saw the original plans. The original plans had that other staircase in. The space is not exactly symmetrical, but it has a very strong symmetrical flavor to it, the way it's laid out. And they said, this is what they meant to do. Let's build that staircase. And so they did such a, doing such a good job with the design of the new staircase and doing such a splendid job of cleaning and restoring the old staircase, they look a lot. No one ever guesses that they're 100 years apart. The original one on the west is modeled on the grand staircase in the Paris Opera. That's the other spot that's actually based on a particular building.
Let's talk about the Whispering Gallery. You see a lot of people do this in Grand Central. How does it work? And was it a coincidence?
As far as anybody knows, that's the question we always want to know. No one has ever said it was intentional. It's generally thought to have just been an accident of engineering the way the space was designed. There are always people there. Every tour that I've ever led of Grand Central ends there because people are just fascinated by it. The acoustics are such that there are four corners, and if you put two people in opposite corners facing the wall away from each other and speaking in a normal tone of voice, as you and I are speaking, the sound just sort of travels up and across the arched ceiling and down the other side, and it's like you're on the telephone speaking with somebody. And I remember when I first brought my kids there, I couldn't pull them away. but it's always like that. It's just one of those special areas, and that's why it's called the Whispering Gallery. Also, if you're walking through Grand Central and having a confidential conversation, and you find yourself walking towards the Whispering Gallery, you might want to stop talking until you get past it, because everyone will hear what you're saying.
Let's look up at the constellations. What inspired the constellations?
Well, the constellations were, the design was laid out by a visiting French artist, Paul César Hélou, whom Whitney Warren had known from Paris. It's the night sky. It's the zodiac plus the ecliptic. That's the line that's the apparent path of the sun. The sun doesn't cross the sun doesn't go around the earth. The earth goes around the sun, but the sun traces a path. And that's there. And you think for a minute, well, what's that got to do with Grand Central? And then you realize, well, you know what? This is about navigation. No train conductor has ever looked up at the stars to figure out where to go. But in ancient times, that's how it was done. And they were very proud, by the way, of this original plan. They had a Columbia professor of astronomy working with the artists to lay it out. And also, the 61 of the stars are actually electric light bulbs. I mean, a lot of effort went into it. And they put out a little notice saying, if your children are studying astronomy, you can do no better than to bring them here to Grand Central because we have done this wonderful ceiling. Unfortunately, within a few weeks of its opening, a commuter who happened to be an amateur astronomer looked up and said, you know, that's upside down and backwards. And there have been explanations for why that may have happened. What you see is not the original. The original had crumbled by the 1940s. It had to be completely redone. And so the an artist who had worked as an apprentice on the original was now a full-fledged master. He came in and repainted it, and somebody said to him, well, now that you're going to redo it, are you going to fix it so that it won't be upside down and backwards? And his answer was, this isn't the planetarium. This is a work of art. No, I'm not going to change it. And so it still is upside down and backwards.
So many people who have lived in New York a long time know of the whole story of the restoration of Grand Central. I'm curious if there's one place, we have about a minute left, that's your favorite place in Grand Central to point out.
Well, in terms of the restoration, it has to be the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis Foyer. I mean, yeah. Mrs. Onassis played a critical role in bringing attention to the fight. We don't know if it would have been saved without her. It was a huge effort. It involved the city, the Landmarks Preservation Commission, all sorts of nonprofits standing, and ultimately a decision in 1978 of the Supreme Court. But she became the face of the effort, and that was a very famous face. And so that foyer, as you enter from 42nd Street underneath the Pershing Square Viaduct, is now called the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis Foyer, and there is a portrait of her on the wall, probably the least attractive portrait of her I've ever seen, but nevertheless, it's there. She was I don't think she would have wanted a lot of attention called to her from everything I've heard about her, but this she deserves.
It's a lovely tribute. Anthony Robbins is a tour guide, and he's the author of Grand Central, 100 Years of a New York Landmark. Anthony, thank you so much for taking us on a tour as part of our Summer in Place series.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.